Gavin, thank you very much. Good morning, and I take heed at Gavin's wording. I won't stand between you and lunch, but I may go through one or two of my slides quite slickly, if you don't mind, then, Gavin. I sit on the governing board of the International Corporate Governance Network, the ICGN, and we are a network of the investor community. Most of our members are really large investors, the biggest pension funds in the world, the CalPERS, the CalSTRS, the Hermes, many asset managers like BlackRock who are our members. And collectively, they have something like $26 trillion under investment looking for a home one way or another. When we talk about investors, and here we talk about them almost as if they're a homogenous group, they are far from homogenous. We have small investors, individual investors, small funds, retail investors, going all the way to the larger ones and the institutional investors. And believe me, the attitude from the small to the large is very various. We have asset owners, those who deal in their own funds, those who are asset managers, those who deal in the funds of others. Some are active investors, some are passive investors. So what's the relevance of that for the IASB and the IFRS? When we go to our investor community, it's very hard to get a single voice. We have very much some prime mainstream things we look at, and particularly we know, obviously, financial information is our lifeblood, and we want to see it being good quality, consistent, comparable, all of the right attributes for financial information. But when we go and we ask them about, well, what's your view on the conceptual framework, what's your view on the revenue recognition standard, it does vary according to the kinds of portfolios they might have, according to the standards they might have. So what do we do in this? Since the financial crisis, I do recall very clearly Hector Sant saying, well, it's your money, investors. What were you doing when the banks were undertaking these egregious risks? And actually, we probably were quite culpable. So we have had to step up in the most recent times. Our main activities now are to try to influence public policy, hence why I'm here. I also sit on the IAASB, the IESBA, we have to actually deal with public policy and particularly company governance practices, because we see corporate governance as fundamentally leading to good management and transparency and accountability from the board and from the company. So we try to influence those processes. We want to be a forum for dialogue between investors and companies and regulators. Particularly, we want to try to connect companies with our membership so that at our conferences, for example, we'll have companies come along and present themselves so that our members can hear what that company is about and what its opportunities are for them and vice versa, and to open the dialogue, if you like, between companies and between investors. And then our other main activity is informing. We inform our membership through policy statements, guidance statements, sets of principles, most of which are voluntary, because we cannot strong-arm them into compulsoriness. But some countries take our standards and then apply them and make them mandatory, or at least make them very strongly recommended. So they're our main activities. We divide our membership up so that we do get input in particular areas that are of interest to us on accounting and audit, and I sit on the Accounting and Audit Committee, Business Ethics Committee, Corporate Risk Oversight, Integrated Reporting. These are the ones that we have. Shareholder responsibilities and shareholder rights are very important and active committees to us. But in the Accounting and Audit Committee, we have dealt with audit quality issues. We've talked about and input into business ethics and particularly standards in terms of reporting illegal and suspected illegal activities. We put into the IFRS conceptual framework, revenue recognition, and so on. But that comes out of a group of something like about five or six people who have another day job, just like myself. So why do we engage in all of these activities, particularly in financial reporting? As I said, it is the lifeblood for us. We do need to start somewhere in our review before we put companies on our lists for investment. We need to have quality, good quality, high quality international standards, particularly in accounting. And we look at audit to give us some assurance on those financial statements. But equally too, we are looking at a lot of other non-financial information, and we're looking to probably press for more assurance on those non-GAAP financial measures. The non-GAAP financial measures, if I might say, are very soft and very variable. So it is an opportunity if the ISB is thinking of just having a look at those measures. And as I say, financial information is our lifeblood, but we have to spread ourselves wide and thin because we have recognised what risks we have in terms of the environment. You only have to look at the costs to a company like BP from the Deepwater Horizon experience, from BHP and its experience with its subsidiaries in Brazil, and just look at Volkswagen. It costs company and investors money in terms of their share price or their ultimate dividend. So we do have to pay attention to a much broader area rather than just financial reporting. But we do make a priority and do have a priority, a public policy priority for IFRS work, IAASB work, IESBA work, and the IIRC. The IIRC is important to us because it is growing in its impact in terms of strategy reporting, risk reporting, in terms of reporting the viability of a company and so forth. So those are the areas we are focusing on at the moment. We do have the Accounting and Auditing Policy Committee. For your interest, we have a paper called What Investors Want from Financial Reporting, because I hear, oh, the investors want. We have a paper on that. Don't rush out to read it just yet because it is under review. It's a much bigger, broader issue now, and we're just updating it. So hold your wrist on that. I'll let you know when we've got it going. But I'll give you an example of the issues that we have. The current priorities, when we had a look at the conceptual framework, particularly around the issue of prudence in the conceptual framework, we ended up having to steer a very fine line on that because our membership really wasn't cohesive on that. Most of the other conceptual framework issues we were, but on that particular point, not so. So it's not always easy. As you know, you have various stakeholders at the IASB. You can't keep everybody happy all of the time. It's a difficult one. I just want to focus now before I get toward the end. Our 2016 policy priorities are to promote a long-term investment perspective. When we say long-term, our pension planners have to look long-term. We're looking for returns out 20, 30 years. So whilst we're doing that, we've got to be sure we protect minority shareholders, because usually, even though we're big, usually we only own 1 or 2% of a company because we need to diversify our risk. So we're usually a minority shareholder. So we're focusing very much on minority shareholder issues. We are expecting, and we help our members clarify their positions in terms of when they're putting points of view at annual general meetings sometimes, in terms of differential ownership rights. We are in favour of one share, one vote. We do see the rise, actually, of increased usage of differential ownership rights, and we are concerned a little bit about that. We are also concerned about the capacity of the investor to actually be influential in the entities in which we invest. Very often, and I go back to what I'm saying, I mostly work in emerging markets, largely the big ones, India, China, and some of the smaller ones, Vietnam and Indonesia. But we are very concerned about the way in which we can input into the companies, and particularly at the board level, particularly when they have cross-border voting issues. Very often we can't even get to the annual general meeting, we can't get access, e-voting is not available. And the information that we're getting is not always clear and transparent, and boards are not accountable. Sometimes they don't turn up to the annual general meeting. So these are the kind of issues that we're having to deal with in terms of getting this long-term view and protecting our own rights. We are tracking the changing boundaries of governance. Corporate governance initially focused on the corporate part of governance. In other words, we focused on the companies. What we're seeing is that there is a shift, not just from corporate governance, but rather from the perspective of other regulators' interest in corporate governance, and as you see in the UK, their assessment of corporate governance and the corporate governance practices in country as implemented. We have the same problem you have, implementation. The OECD is the global benchmark for corporate governance, and the implementation is most variable. So we're looking at the changing boundaries, and the new things that we're watching on the rise is how you assess in corporate governance the leadership of the entity, the culture in the entity, the attitudes towards risk in the entity, the base ethics in the entity. And there's some initial work being undertaken by ourselves in collaboration with others, particularly on culture and ethics, risk, we collaborate with others on that. But there are certain things that we're watching for. We're watching for issues regarding human rights, issues regarding tax policy, issues regarding political lobbying, and throughout the ethics, the whole ethics area, the prevalence of bribery and corruption, regulatory interference in some of the regions in which we need to invest. We're seeking transparency through robust reporting, audit, and other metrics. We've got increased audit quality and a good focus on increased the quality of the audit work, the competence and independence of the auditor. So we're focusing on that at the moment. But we are fast moving to those other metrics I mentioned, the non-GAAP measures. And in fact, in December, we have a collaboration of a conference here in London on December 6 and 7 with the IIRC, but it covers those other issues that we need to address. We have, since we've been asked to step forward, we have had a close look at our own policies that we put out, and we have introduced our own governance principles for investors, and then we've also introduced stewardship principles about the way in which they should manage their investments. Now, going back to that conversation I had about, yes, there are asset owners and some of them just put their funds out with asset managers, we also have a way in which we're asking our asset owners, if they do put their funds out with asset managers, to demand the same stewardship responsibilities from the asset manager. So what is stewardship? Well, it's the same. It's actually that old-fashioned term we used to use when... years ago when I was thinking about joining the accounting profession. It is that old-fashioned word. A wine steward looks after the wine, sees it served at the right temperature. It's just right. Well, for us, stewardship means the responsible management of funds entrusted to us. And it might come from clients, and it might come from the requirement for our fiduciary duty of care might come from our beneficiaries. We do have to, when we consider our investments, make sure that that's uppermost in our mind. And we are agents for the end beneficiaries, for our end clients. And these include our pensioners, yes, but holders of insurance policies, private investors and so on. So whilst we are not a homogenous group, also our end user is not a homogenous group. But we look at companies at the micro level. We use our ownership rights with them, and we're looking increasingly to having a close dialogue with companies in which we invest. And the companies that put up the barriers or send you off to an investor relations member of staff probably are not high on the list. They don't get there unless they've really got some really good return that we might make consideration. We really need to hear what the board and what the directors have to say in terms of the sustainable long-term success of the companies. So we are looking for information on their business models, which has been missing in annual reports, far less, but it's not necessarily associated with the financial system. We're also looking at the macro systemic issues, and so we do a lot of work, in particular financial markets, and in what closely related to economic development. Myself, for my day job, I do work with groups like stock exchanges in India, in Vietnam. I've done work with Malaysia as well, lots of these, but equally we do a lot of work with individual companies. So it's a mix, macro, micro, it's a mix of things. Coming down to the final, I think I might, most of our standards are comply or explain. We encourage compliance. Increasingly, we're looking to monitoring just how much our investors are taking note of what we do. But for a not-for-profit organisation with few staff, that becomes a challenge. But I'd like to turn to the last slide. These are our global stewardship principles, which we issued in 2016, earlier this year. We ask our investor community to look at their own internal governance to see that they are effective stewards and effectively handling their fiduciary duty of care before they start working out and looking at their investee community in the investee companies. Some countries have developed and implemented the stewardship policies. Congratulations to Japan, who's introduced a new corporate governance code, but equally a new stewardship code. Malaysia, a new stewardship code. Hong Kong, I believe, has one in draft. Obviously, the UK has it, and other countries around Europe are endorsing similar policies. So we are looking now to asking our investors to monitor and assess the investee companies really more actively than they were before, certainly to answer Hector Sant's accusation. We are expect engagement with the company, and this engagement can come, you know, in all sorts of ways. But some companies really don't wish to engage. They don't say they don't have the time, or they don't want to give away confidential information. We're not seeking confidential information. We're seeking to have a dialogue on what it is we need from the entity and to hear from them if they're going to change or adapt or develop their corporate governance entities. We are more focused exercising our voting rights, and certainly in some institutional investors are collaborating on voting their on voting at AGMs on particular resolutions. Obviously, remuneration has been an issue, but increasingly the environmental, social and governance issues are on the rise. It's cost, as I say, us huge amounts of money, and we really focus on this just as much now as on the financial issues. Obviously, we're interested in enhancing transparency, disclosure and reporting from our investee companies, but equally we're being asked ourselves to enhance our transparency, to say how we're going to vote, why we're going to vote that way, and did we vote that way. So a lot more accountability from our own selves. So finally, we get to our members very often through our committee structure, but also and through our networks. But equally, we have our conferences. Two of those are smaller ones, the Frankfurt one we held at the Deutsche Börse in April. The big one coming up is a couple of weeks away in San Francisco. And the investors get together, and many of the companies send their people along to come and do that association, that connection with the investor community. And as I say, we've got a London conference coming up in December with the IIRC. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about what we do or how we do it, but that's why we're so interested in what you do here at the IFRS and IASB. Thanks. Bye now.
Any questions, Brian? No. Maybe, Goro, if we move on to you, and then if there are questions at the end, we can take them anyway.
Okay. Okay, today I will talk about the Securities Analyst Association of Japan's contribution to corporate reporting. Unlike ANTS, ICGN, we are the very Japanese-centric. But the one of the good news from Japan is that we are encouraging adoption of IFRS to Japanese companies, and by the end of this March, that the number of the IFRS adopters in Japan increased to 100. And further, we expect that this number will reach 140 by the end of the next fiscal year. You know, the Japanese companies fiscal year, most Japanese companies fiscal year ends March, and the May and June the kind of earnings reporting season. And by now, we have found that some 140 companies will adopt by March next year. I don't have the exact number, but I guess probably these 140 companies tend to be more large, large cap companies. There are some 3,000 companies, Japanese listed companies, and so 140 may look quite a few, but actually, I believe that it will probably represent some 30% of the total market capitalization of Japan. And this will probably be, or Japan will become one of the top five or top six IFRS adopter in terms of market capitalization. And on the back of that, I would like to comment on the some activities on Japan. First of all, the profile of the SSAJ, that we have a quite a long history, that the SAJ founded on October 15th of 1962, supported by mainly securities companies, banks, insurance companies, trust companies, etc. And we are promoting the development of analytical techniques and professional standards through insurance issuance of CMA, or Chartered Member Analyst Qualification. And the number of the CMA charter holders is around 26,000. And also, we have a kind of alliance with the CIIA, and we are promoting that the CIIA, or the Certified International Investment Analyst Qualification. And also, we are setting high professional standards in Japan. SAAJ executes training and examination programs of the CMA and the CIIA applicants. And also, SAAJ offers continuing educational training activities for the CMA members. And we are also promoting research on capital markets by publishing Securities Analyst Journal, which is one of the major academic or professional journal on the finance. And we have an annual conference with the Nippon Finance Association. And we formed industry study group, which analyzed that the sector analysis. And the SAAJ sets the professional codes and standards for the CMA, and the code of ethics and standards of professional conduct, and also as investment performance standards for the asset management firm in Japan. And we form some committees to voice for the better capital markets. One is at the Corporate Accounting Committee, which I represent, or the CAC, and also Corporate Disclosure Study Group comment that those companies with good disclosures every year. And the Investment Performance Standards Committee set, this is kind of the standard set of investment performance standards. And also that in the recent years, the private banking is becoming more increasingly important financial services, and the SAAJ provides private banking education study group. And let me talk about the Corporate Accounting Committee more detail. The Corporate Accounting Committee, or CAC, is held on an ad hoc basis to issue comment letters to IASB and ASBJ, etc. And the chairperson is a Professor Keiko Kitamura of Chuo University, who is one of the most respected accounting professor in Japan. And Our member is 14, and the breakdown of which is financial statement users 11, and academicians accountants 3. And the next page, yes, the CAC issues comment letters to the ISB, the ASBJ, or Accounting Standards Board of Japan, and so on, to deliver the financial statement users' views to the standard setters and regulators. And the recent comment letters to the ISB includes agenda consultation, trustee review of structure and effectiveness, as well as the conceptual framework of financial reporting. And also, recent comment letters to ASBJ includes development of comprehensive revenue recognition standards and the guidance on recoverability of deferred tax assets. The Japan is not the IFRS adopter, so we still have a Japanese GAAP. Many companies use Japanese GAAP as a default. And we have our own convergence process, and our largest agenda is the convergence to IFRS 15. So we form that the revenue recognition technical group to discuss that how we can translate IFRS 15 to Japanese standards. So that this is a Japanese standard. That I don't think that it is completely identical with IFRS 15 to reflect some Japanese local or regional background, but still that currently we lack that the comprehensive revenue standards. So it will be large progress in the Japanese accounting standard as a whole. And we have a well-established comment letter drafting process. When we issue, when we believe that the exposure draft or discussion paper request for views issued from the ISB or ASBJ, if we believe these are the very important, then we will hold the seminar on exposure draft DP and the RFB issued by ISB, ASBJ, etc. The lecturer tend to be that the ASBJ staff who are very familiar with the agenda. And then after the seminar, we conduct the opinion survey to the CMA members, and also that corporate accounting committee members are asked how they feel about the ED. Then we will hold corporate accounting committee, and then with a rigorous discussion in the committee that we issue comment letter. Then page 8. Clearly, we are the largest community for the Japanese financial statement users, so that we dispatch our member, the CAC members, to the several global standard setting process, as well as the domestic. And clearly, IFRS Advisory Council and the Capital Market Advisory Committee are myself. And also, we have one representative at the Consultative Advisory Group of the IASB. And in the domestically, we are actively participating in the domestic financial reporting process as well. And our members have a seat at the ASBJ itself, and as well as a technical committee of ASBJ, which includes revenue recognition technical committees, etc. And also, Japan recently developed that the Japanese yeah, there are the Japanese standards, which is very close to IFRS, called JMIS. And this is done through the so-called endorsement process in Japan. And the only two major, you know, points are carved out, mainly that the profit and loss and the OCI recycling, as well as a goodwill amortization, which are the very strong, you know, the comments from voice from Japan. And anyway, that the advent of this endorsement of IFRS, that Japan now have its own endorsement process of IFRS. And lastly, the Business Accounting Council of the JFSA, that the ASBJ is a standard set, but the accounting system in Japan as a whole is decided by this Business Accounting Council of Japan Financial Services Agency of Japan. And we have members in the Business Accounting Council, as well as it's a subcommittee of Accounting Committee and the Audit Committee. Lastly, relationship with Kraft Japan. Lota had a presentation in February, and the members of the Corporate Accounting Committee of SAAJ overlap substantially with those of the Kraft Japan. The CAC members meets on an ad hoc basis as necessary, while the Kraft Japan meets on a monthly basis. The Kraft Japan is very active, and the CAC issues comment letters to both domestic and global issues under its own name, while the Kraft Japan expresses our views from Japan to the global Kraft headquarters, mostly on the IFRS, which may be reflected as a part of Kraft's comment letters. Okay, and lastly, as Anne mentioned, we have introduced stewardship code in 2014 and the corporate governance code 2015. We are quite keen on the very active discussion, constructive discussion, dialogue between the management and the investors, analysts now, to restore the growth of Japan. And this dialogue, we believe that the would contribute the recovery of Japanese companies' growth potential as well as profitability. So in that regard, I believe that increasing the promotion of IFRS adoption is in the same, you know, the policy direction. So that the SAAJ will continue to commit the promotion of adoption of IFRS Japan, as well as the engagement activity between the management and investors. Thank you very much.
Any questions, comments? No? I guess, Goro, can I ask you about sort of Japanese analysts' views, stroke interest on IFRS? Mm-hmm. How would you rank it? Clearly in Japan you have the standards set mm-hmm. by the Japanese standard mm-hmm. setter, and you have IFRS. What's the sort of dynamics around mm-hmm. that from an analyst viewpoint? Oh,
thank you very much. That is very important. You know, Japan is a kind of a special situation in the world, that we have our own accounting standard. We call it as JGAAP. And then that the US GAAP. Japan's authority allowed Japanese companies to issue their financial statement, consolidated financial statement on the US GAAP quite a long time ago, when Japan lacks the consolidated accounting standard. Then that the more recently we that Japan started to allow you know the voluntary adoption of IFRS since 2010, and the now increasing number of Japanese companies are switching from that the Japanese GAAP or US GAAP to IFRS, and the from Japanese point of view, that the you know JGAAP provides more comparability, but we recognize that the sticking to the Japanese GAAP only is you know we might be kind of so-called Galapagos, so that the increasing number of global Japanese companies are shifting from Japanese GAAP or US GAAP to US GAAP to IFRS, and the now that the one of the problem though is that the we have found compared to other standards JGAAP or US GAAP that the IFRS adopting Japanese companies lacks in a sense discipline to present their financial statements. Like Ian said earlier, particularly on the income statement. So, the in that regard, that the we want to see more disciplined, you know, disclosure basis for IFRS adopter, and the JFSA provides that the kind of sample disclosure based upon IFRS to the upcoming Japanese IFRS adopters, that the, that might be you know that the good examples for or the kind of not the guideline it is not you know the required but still it's it, we expect it would give a quite good reference for new Japanese IFRS adopters to provide more, you know, standardized financial statement. Is that okay?
Thank you.
I had a question for Anne. As far as your policy priorities are concerned, one of the items you've put out here is promoting long-term investment perspectives. There's been quite some, debate and perspectives being put out on the interplay between the long-term investment strategies vis-a-vis corporate reporting, recognition and measurement requirements, as well as issues around the frequency of quarterly reporting. I was just wondering whether your organization has had any particular positions or papers on this topic?
No, not Vincent, thank you very much for the question. When we talk about looking at long term, we're looking at long term sustainability of the entities. So we are starting with looking at not just the financial information, but the ESG information as well, and encouraging that and the development of that expertise in our membership. Regarding recognition and measurement, we have a major problem with what occurred in the financial crisis. I mean, you take, for example, one bank here in the United Kingdom, closed its year in December, had its financial statements audited and all signed off by, say, January, February. But in March, it was going to the government saying we need a desperate handout. We have a major problem with that. We don't have a particular policy position on quarterly reporting other than our members are thoroughly aware that it is not necessarily the be-all and end-all. Some of our member community use quarterly reports. Some actually just sort of wait for a six-month period and keep a monitoring eye out there. The jury's out from our membership about quarterly reporting. What we do need is basically, we want to have the comparability of financial reports, and that's a starting point for us. But that's actually past for us. It's the past. We see our returns coming from the future. So our analyst community, our asset owner community will spend a lot more time looking out there. So the answer is we don't have a policy at this point on particularly on long-term versus corporate reporting as it stands, but we are looking at our policy on financial reporting to review it and what we want from financial statements and financial reporting. So probably a case of watch this space, Vincent. Thank you.
I just wanted to make a short comment before lunch. I have two comments. First, as for the IFRS adoption of Japan, Japan has committed to the single set to set a single set of high quality standards, and also Japanese government has written this objective in our growth strategy. And on the other hand, we have to listen to the voice of investors. So Japanese government is now currently promoting voluntary adoption of IFRS. And as Goro said, more than 100 listed companies have adopted IFRS, and which means about more than 20% of market capitalization. And we would like to keep the discussion with IFRS Foundation to make this objective. And I also appreciate the role of securities analysts, which is very important profession, which represents the voice of investors. And also, the second comment is about corporate governance. I'd like to thank Anne and Goro about your comment about Japanese corporate governance reform. Currently, Japanese FSA is trying to improve the corporate governance because we are facing the issue of aging society. And in order to increase the household assets, the return on household assets, we have to focus on market-based investments more. To make this more effective, we are trying to improve the corporate governance of our companies. In that sense, to achieve this, we have just issued corporate governance code and a stewardship code, which we expect will increase the transparency and attractiveness of Japanese corporations. Thank you.
May I ask on the accounting information on the stewardship? You suggest many good, interesting ideas here. Do you think the accounting information on or for stewardship might be different from the accounting information for so-called valuation purpose?
We are, put it this way, when we look at our at the financial information that is provided for us, we are expected to undertake our own stewardship role to really look at those numbers and verify them as much as we possibly can, bearing in mind, and this is why we're interested in engagement with the companies, bearing in mind that we sit at an arm's length from the company and therefore can only research, find out what information is available. So we are asked to undertake our own reviews of that. We do look at the financial information, and what we find is particularly some of the disclosures are not adequate. We particularly when you get down to related party transactions, in many jurisdictions that's just not adequate. The disclosures regarding foreseeable risks, probably not sufficient. And so we undertake our own homework on that before we undertake our investment decisions. So in terms of that's the relationship we see. Are we seeing a change in the markets? We only issued the stewardship principles this year. We've had considerable take-up of other stewardship codes mimicking what we've put out, so we're comfortable with that. But I think it's a long haul before we can see it has an impact. We will be interested to see the impact it might have.
So, last one before lunch, so no pressure.
I have a question for Anne. Anne, if I understand your presentation well, then the relevance of non-financial information is increasing. You referred to the relevance of the IIRC in relation to the risk disclosures. You refer to the ESG information for the long-term outlook. I was wondering, do you have certain expectations from auditors and from regulators in respect to this information?
In this area, yes, we have an expectation, and I touched on it very briefly on the way through. We would, just as we see some assurance around the financial information, we would hope to see some assurance around the non-financial information. I think it's very early days to get, we have not grappled with what is the nature of that assurance we'd like. Even if you just take one small subset of all of this, some countries are requiring disclosures regarding carbon emissions. Well, there's a whole set of books you could write on how you measure it, how you look at it, but are we expecting some sort of disclosure about how it's handled, the policies, the way in which they raise the issues, way in which they mitigate the risks? Yes. And as soon as they can move a little bit more closely to metrics, yes. But I would like to suggest, I think that is relatively early days. I think some of the instruments for coming out from various other places, you know, see the OECD puts out for the larger companies its guidance for multinational enterprises, and that covers a lot of their requirements for E, S and G. But the reporting on that is still early days, but the expectation is there with a little bit more assurance around it.